Luke chapter 8, starting at verse 40. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. And Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished. But he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened.
Jane, thank you very much for reading for us. Let's keep our Bibles open as we look at that story in Luke's Gospel together. Here's the title for this morning, The Difference Faith Makes. How much difference does faith make to your lives, to people that you know, to people that you meet, people who don't have faith, who do have faith, to neighbours, to children, to family members? It's easy to, I think, to underestimate the difference that Christian faith can make, to think of it as only a small thing, only a minor thing. Perhaps it makes some people feel better, we say, or it takes our mind off difficulties or helps us put them in perspective. We think of it as perhaps a bit like a hobby, a kind of optional extra that some people choose in life and some people find is not helpful. Or the sort of thing that we would go look to for a self-help book or a nice chat with a friend or a wise counsellor. Helpful, yes, useful, but not essential, not necessary. Or perhaps we have come to believe that faith in Jesus makes a difference after we die. And of course that is massive. If that's what you believe, then that's huge, isn't it? It makes a difference for all eternity. But it is easy to see that as something very distant and very far off and something that feels unreal in our day-to-day lives. And today we're just a bit more focused on getting our work done, getting our house sorted out, meeting our everyday needs, dealing with some issue that's come up in life that is troubling us. And sometimes we can be a bit complacent about Christian faith and think, well, it only makes a small difference, or feel that way. And it's only when we really start to face a crisis, it's only when we see how bad things get in life, and only when we feel that desperation, that we realise how important it is, whether you think it's true, whether you think it's not true, how important it is to decide about Christian faith. Well, chapters 7 and 8 of Luke's Gospel are about how much difference it makes to have Christian faith. And they deal with people who sometimes are in a crisis and sometimes are desperate. And it's easy to just dismiss that and say, well, they only believed because they were desperate. But sometimes that is the only time when we realise what is really going on in life and what really matters. and we're sort of woken up to face reality more clearly. So we're going to look at the difference faith makes. And these stories of Jesus in Luke are really summed up in this way. They're saying faith in Jesus saves us. Or as Jesus put it, your faith has saved you. Go in peace, as he says in Luke 7, verse 50. Now, often in the Bible, the most important words in a particular part of the Bible are there right in the middle. To sum it up, that's what happens here, chapter 7 and 8, sort of carefully written by Luke with a big idea right there in the middle at the end of chapter 7. Jesus tells a woman that her sins are forgiven. And she is overjoyed. She's so grateful. She's so moved. She loves Jesus so much. Her sins are forgiven. Everything she's ever done wrong, forgotten by God, wiped away, dealt with, forgiven. He will love and accept her forever. And Jesus explains the reason for that. He says it's very simple. Your faith has saved you. Your trust in Jesus. That was all it took for you to be forgiven and saved. It's really the big idea of the whole of Luke's gospel. That faith in Jesus means we can be reconciled with God and forgiven by him and known by him forever. But these chapters want to show us how much difference that makes. And how wonderful it is to be rescued. What an enormous thing it is to see salvation. And although Jesus is talking about forgiveness of sins when he talks about your faith has saved you in chapter 7, he uses the almost the exact same wording in what we're looking at now, in the reading that we just had from a little bit later in Luke. So he says, your faith has healed. Well, you could translate that saved. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Actually, the same word as in chapter 7, verse 50, saved, can be translated healed. If it's someone is saved from sickness, then you might translate that healed. But it's the same word Jesus used when he talks to a woman about being forgiven of sin, and not being healed at all. So your faith has saved you, go in peace. Luke 8, your faith has healed or saved you, go in peace. And then a little bit further on, just believe. Again, you could translate that, just have faith and she will be healed or she will be saved. Almost the same here. And I think it's important to notice that being healed and being saved in Luke's gospel have a lot to do with each other. It's not that the people who are being healed have done anything terrible that needs to be forgiven. It's just that when Jesus saves us from sins, he also saves us from all the damage that sin causes in our lives and in our world. Jesus fixes everything that sin has broken. He did that when he died on the cross once and for all. That was the outcome. The outcome was decided from that moment. For all who trust in him, every consequence of sin was fixed when Jesus died on the cross. And the full experience of that reality we have to wait for. We have to continue to endure all the consequences and damage that sin causes to our lives and our world, or many of them. But we look forward to the day when they're removed completely, when we meet him. And Jesus has already said that's why he's doing all these miracles. He explained it to John the Baptist that way in chapter 7, that each of these stories gives us a picture, a snapshot. They prove to us what Jesus can do. They show us what he will do for everyone in the end. They show us how great salvation is. We've seen in these chapters Jesus saving people from sickness and death, saving people from grief and poverty, saving from the dangers of natural disasters, saving from extreme evil and supernatural forces. And now we're going to see Jesus save two people who really are desperate and at the very end of their hopes. They're very different people, actually, the two people in this reading. But Luke has deliberately sort of weaved their stories together as he tells them to link them together. Jesus is on his way to help one person. He's interrupted by the other person. One has a sick daughter who is 12 years old. The other has a sickness that has lasted for 12 years. Both of them fall at Jesus' feet in the same way. Jesus talks to one about his daughter and calls the other his daughter. They're very different people. One rules the synagogue. The other can't bear to be seen in the synagogue. They're very different people. But they have something in common, because we all have something in common. And that is our very, very desperate need to be saved by Jesus, to be saved from all the devastating things that we face in this life and in this world. You might remember some years ago a TV program called Junior Doctors, BBC TV program, Junior Doctors, Your Life in Their Hands. It wasn't very reassuring. You watch all these doctors, they've only just finished their training and they're let loose on patients and all sorts of distressing things are happening behind the scenes and it becomes clear they haven't got a clue what they're doing. And the title is kind of ironic, Your Life in Their Hands. It puts you off ever wanting to go in a hospital again, I think, as you think of your life being in the hands of these young people. And Luke is saying to us, look, your life is safe in the hands of Jesus Christ. Look at what he has done. Look at what he can do. Don't put your faith in anyone else. Put it in him. Put your trust in him. Rely on him. That's what it means, I think, to have faith in Jesus. Our lives in his hands. So faith in Jesus saves us. Let's look at those two people and their stories one at a time. And let's see what Jesus saves us from. He saves us from desperate shame. That's the story of the woman who is bleeding, verses 40 to 48, we're going to look at first. Jesus saving us from desperate shame. From that sense that we just want to hide, that we don't want anyone to notice us, that we feel tainted, we feel ashamed, we don't want to be out in the open or want to be seen. Chapter 8, verse 40. Let's read it again. Page 1038. I'm just going to read from it. The bottom of the page, chapter 8, verse 40. Now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. The whole crowd gathers. They all want Jesus. They all need him for something. A huge crowd. He's come back. He's been over on the boats. He's been and saved this guy with the demonic influence. He's come back again, and everybody wants Jesus because everybody needs him. But here are two people who need him especially badly. And this man, the synagogue leader, well, he's only got one daughter, and she's only 12. I don't know if you can imagine how that would feel if you've seen your child suffering and you can't help them, especially so young. And he's an important person. He's a synagogue ruler. He's used to people telling him what to do. But here he is falling at Jesus' feet, not just asking Jesus for help, but pleading, we're told, pleading with Jesus to help. Here is someone who is desperate and understandably so. And then verse 42 continues, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. Well, she's desperate as well. We don't know her name. We know the name of Jairus. I mean, he's a synagogue leader. He must have been well known. Luke has no trouble finding out his name to include in his account of what happened, but he doesn't know the name of this woman. And I'm guessing, well, you know, we're told that she didn't want to be noticed. She didn't want to be seen. Perhaps her bleeding made it difficult for her to go out of the house easily. Perhaps others see her as being potentially infectious. Maybe they're not quite sure what causes it. Well, she doesn't know what's causing it either. Are they worried about being too close to her, being involved with her? Will she find it difficult to be in their homes, in public places? Will she find it difficult to make friends, to be known, to be seen by people? Perhaps she's just simply embarrassed. This unpredictable bleeding that can happen at any moment. Now, it's one thing to be in that situation for a few days at a time, perhaps for a week or two. That was common enough. But this woman has been bleeding like that for 12 years. She's tried to find help again and again. No one can heal her. No one can put it right. She is desperate. Verse 44 continues like this. She came up behind him, behind Jesus, and touched the edge of his cloak. She doesn't want to be seen by Jesus. She doesn't come in front of him where she can talk to him or be noticed. She sneaks up behind him. She touches him. She doesn't want him to feel her touch. So she doesn't touch his body. She touches just the edge of his cloak where she might more easily go unnoticed. And immediately her bleeding stopped. Immediately. The great power of Jesus to fix a 12-year problem. In an instant, without even being aware that it's happening. Well, except he is aware. He's not aware who has touched him, but he knows someone has touched him. Verse 45. Who touched me? Jesus asked. When they all denied it, this woman doesn't want to be seen. She's had a lifetime of hiding. Well, 12 years. She's not going to own up in front of a big crowd and have all eyes turned to her. She stays quiet. When they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. But Jesus said, Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. Someone touched me. It's not that Jesus is a sort of battery and he can sense that his kind of power levels are draining down somehow. Jesus has infinite power, but he can tell that power has been put to use and that it has gone and helped somebody else. And he wants to know who that is. She doesn't want to be seen or heard. And you could say, well, Jesus could have left it there. Peter wants him to. Peter is saying, look, the crowds are crushing you, Jesus. What do you mean asking who touched you? Could have been any of them. They probably didn't even notice they touched you. Jairus, who knows what he's thinking? I mean, his daughter could die at any moment. He is in the most urgent hurry he's ever been in his life. And Jesus is stopping to find out who touched him. Why does it matter? But Jesus has all the time in the world for this woman. He keeps the daughter of the synagogue waiting, and he calls her my daughter. Because he doesn't just want to heal the sickness, he wants to heal the shame, the humiliation, the isolation, and the hiding. So he draws her out into the public to sort of unshame her, as it were. Let's read him doing that, verse 47. Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. Have you ever found yourself shaking? If you have to do something in public, you have to stand up in front of people and they're all watching you and they're all listening to you, and you find that your kind of hands are trembling and shaking. Well, she's trembling and she fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. In the presence of all the people, she's known and she's seen as someone who is healed. Someone who is clean. Someone who is safe to be with. Someone who can be part of society. Someone honored by Jesus, called by Jesus, his daughter. Just earlier in the chapter, he said to his followers, anyone who knows me and follows me is my brother and my sister and my mother. Well, she is his daughter. She is part of God's family. And she's to be honored and to be respected. And very publicly, Jesus has changed our whole life. And it will never be the same from that day on. Part of the background to this is the Old Testament law. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, people were unclean after they'd had a bodily discharge. It's not a sexist thing. Women were unclean after a period. Men were unclean if they'd had an emission of semen. Men and women were unclean if some other bodily fluid had been discharged in some way. And there's no hint that there is anything morally wrong with any of that. I mean, none of us can help these things. There's no sense of being criticized or blamed for any of that. In one sense, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And yet we all know that there is something very uncomfortable about being unclean in that way when people can see us. We all have locks on our toilet doors, and rightly so. And none of us would want to be without one. Because we're living in a world that has been damaged by sin, and one of the, it's not that we sin when we're unclean, but one of the consequences of sin is that we're living in a broken and a fallen world where it is very easy to be in a situation where it's really embarrassing and humiliating and you just don't want to be seen. And the good news is that when Jesus pays the price, there is atonement, not only for the things we've done wrong, but for all the impact that has on us more widely. I think that's what's going on in Leviticus. Let me just read to you the verses that talk about this. There's a whole chapter on it, but in this way, he that the priest in the temple, he will make atonement for her, for the woman who has had the bodily discharge in this case, before the Lord, for the uncleanness of her discharge. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them. You see, God, we can be in God's presence. We can be pure and holy and clean and unashamed and unembarrassed because a price has been paid for sin, because Jesus has died for us. Well, I wonder if you can relate to that sense of feeling embarrassed, ashamed and unclean. Maybe only just for a few moments. I can remember a time when our children were very small in a supermarket. One of them had a nappy that wasn't really functioning very well and they were being held in the arms at the time. I'm not going to give you all the unpleasant details, but it was resolved by rushing in, hiding in a toilet while a new T-shirt was purchased in order to go home in a sort of decent fashion. Well, perhaps you've been in those sort of situations where you've just not wanted to be seen and you wanted to hide away. And perhaps there are times in your life when you feel like that most of the time. A psychologist called Edward Welsh describes shame like this. He says, shame controls far too many of us. We can feel worthless, inferior, rejected, weak, humiliated, a failure. It all adds up to wishing we could get away from others and hide. We may not have done anything wrong. We may know we haven't done anything wrong, but we somehow are tainted by the world we live in, by what others have done perhaps, what others have done to us. And we don't want it to be seen and we don't want it to be known. And this is something that Jesus reverses. He did it for us once and for all when he died on the cross. But it may take us a lifetime to trust in it fully. To believe it, to know that it's true, to accept it, to say, well, I can come out and I can be seen because Jesus declares me his son, his daughter. He sees me as clean and purified and perfect and holy. And he wants the world to see me that way. And we look forward to the day when it won't be difficult to trust it anymore because we'll be in his presence and everyone will know it. Faith in Jesus saves us from desperate shame. And then secondly, faith in Jesus saves us from desperate shame and desperate grief. And that's the rest of the chapter, verses 49 to 56, as we turn from the woman and we turn, Luke often puts women and men together as he tells his story. We turn from a woman now to a man, to the synagogue leader. Let's read on from verse 49. When Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, he said. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed. In that moment, all hope is lost. Jairus has been waiting while Jesus sort of, perhaps in his eyes, messes around with this woman. He's not quite sure why, just patiently waiting to find out who it was that touched him. He stops on the journey, and it turns out that it took too long. They were rushing to save the life of his daughter, his 12-year-old daughter, his only daughter, and she's died because of that delay. And he says to himself, well, even Jesus has let me down. And all my hope is gone now. Well, why bother Jesus anymore? Why pester him with prayer? It's not going to make any difference. He's failed. And Jesus says into that situation, just have faith. It's a simple thing, faith. It's not an easy thing, but it's just a small thing that makes all the difference. Just put your trust in Jesus, your life in his hands, because he says she will be healed, she will be saved. And so it turns out to be, verse 51. When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. These people are devastated. A young girl in their community, in their family perhaps, has just died, and they are wailing. This is not a sort of British funeral with everyone slightly reserved, you know, trying to hide the fact that they're feeling a bit weepy. This is people wailing out loud and expressing their grief and their despair very publicly and very loudly. And when Jesus says, well, you don't need to do that because this girl is not dead for good, she's only asleep. He says she's not dead, but of course he knows, they know that she is dead. They it says in Luke, they know that she's dead. Luke is a doctor himself. He's not saying that the doctors must have made some mistake. She's ill, but she's not dead. That's not the point here. It's clear that she really has died. But Jesus says in his presence, really, death is like sleep. I mean, these people wailing and crying, they're laughing bitterly at Jesus, as if they think he's naive, he's foolish, he's stupid. What a silly idea to think that someone is going to come back to life again. Don't comfort yourself with that nonsense. They laugh at that. They can't take that seriously. And Jesus says, well, let me show you what I can do and what I will do. He talks about it as sleep. But for Jesus, it's as easy as waking someone up from being asleep. I wonder if you're easy to wake up. Or difficult to wake you up, perhaps. I wonder if you sleep quite lightly and you just need a thunderstorm or somebody creaking past on the bedroom floor boards and the creaking boards and you're awake, or there's rain on the window, or it's just too hot and you wake up. Or are you quite hard to wake up? You know, someone's got to go in the morning, there's got to be an alarm clock, you hit it, it goes off again. You know, someone needs to be there shaking you. Well, whether it's hard or whether it's easy, Jesus had no difficulty waking up this girl from death. He didn't find it difficult. It didn't take him long. Verse 54. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. Do you see, it's immediate again. There in verse 55, at once she stood up. When the woman stopped bleeding, we were told it was immediately. In verse 44, she described it as instantly. A bit later in verse 47, and now this girl is alive again. Verse 55, at once. Normally when someone's ill, it takes quite a long time before their appetite comes back and they're able to eat normally. This girl is eating again straight away. Jesus has huge power over death. Even when there's despair, you can understand this man feeling afraid. Jesus saying to him, don't be afraid. Very difficult. But Jesus says, put your faith in him. And the New Testament applies this to all of us. So, for example, in our first reading, we read this, brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. It's not saying that we shouldn't grieve when someone dies. Of course we will grieve. Of course we will be devastated to be without them for the rest of our lives in this world. But it's saying don't grieve in the same way that other people grieve, because they have no hope. And our grief doesn't have that same despair that others feel. We do have hope. And here's the hope we have. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again. And so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. Those who have been trusting in Jesus but have fallen asleep. Their death is temporary. When children are little, and if you're a grandparent and you do this with small children, you count things in. How many sleeps is it going to be? So there's a birthday coming, or Christmas, or you're going away on holiday, and they say to you, how many sleeps is it going to be? And you say, well, it's going to be 4 sleeps, or it's going to be 6 sleeps. Depends, of course, how often they sleep during the day. Sometimes you have to do quite a big lot of maths to work out how many sleeps it is going to be. And when we say goodbye to our our loved ones, and they die. We're going to be devastated by that, all of us. But what a thought. It's only going to be one sleep until they meet Jesus and are with him in paradise forever. Doesn't make life easy to live, but it gives us hope. Hope for the desperate. This is how much difference it makes to have faith in Jesus. It's not a small thing. It's a huge thing. It's a wonderful thing. And Jesus is inviting us in these same words. He says to the woman, your faith has saved you. He says to the man, don't be afraid, just have faith and be saved. Will we put our trust, our lives in his hands? Will we put our confidence in Jesus? Will we trust that the desperate grief, the desperate shame is dealt with? And is being dealt with and will be dealt with through all that Jesus has done for him. Will we take those words of Jesus for ourselves, where he says to the woman, your faith has healed you, go in peace.